Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Oh.
We did it.
What do you got there?
This was, we had a recent mail call, and somebody included a couple of cans of gin gimlet from Venus Spirits. It's like a like a premix cocktail in a can. Pretty good.
That Venus logo looks like money. It looks like the money font.
Mm. It kind of is the money font, yeah.
Yeah.
It's got Venus Gin Blend 1 with lime juice, cucumber, and natural flavors.
Can you shave a woman's legs with it?
I don't know. Is that something you're supposed to be able to do with a cocktail?
Well, I mean, that the name, naming something Venus, made me think of the shaving product of the same name.
Yeah, I don't... I will say that this beverage is my Venus. It's my fire, my desire.
I'm on a text thread with a couple of friends from back in Seattle. And for whatever reason, like, lots of pictures are being traded back and forth. Like, random shit, like... what we're up to. One of my buddies shared a fairly innocuous picture of a big bag of flossers, like those plastic flossers.
Those ones like that have a little like a little U shape, and then there's a bit of dental floss across the across the gap.
The kind you've seen thrown into the street and on the sidewalk all the time.
Yeah.
And
I'm very fastidious about dental hygiene, but no other kind of hygiene.
And much like the famous nude man in a eBay sales ad for a tea kettle situation, I noticed something else on the counter. And when I clicked and enhanced, I noticed what could only be the bottom of two personal shavers.
Wow.
And I was like, hey, what's going on with those two personal shavers? And then that started a whole thing.
One for the face, one for the nards? Was that the deal?
I mean, no. This friend of mine has two body shavers.
Wow.
Two for the body.
Must be a hairy friend. I'm trying to think about which friend of yours this could be.
Yeah, I think you know which hairy friend this is.
Yeah, my mind was immediately went to one person.
The thing about personal shavers is they don't come like cordless drills with battery packs. You know, you can't just slap another magazine in there to keep going. You get
the interchangeable Makita.
Yeah,
brick battery.
If you're a person of a certain amount of forestation, you'll need to just switch to the backup peanut, which is what this friend's got.
Wow.
A primary and backup peanut. I'll never have that problem.
I have a corded peanut, but it's for shaving your head, not for shaving your sack.
That's just nasty, man. What the fuck?
Yeah, you sick piece of shit.
But I mean, so you're doing at home haircuts. That's where we're at right now.
Yeah, we're doing at home haircuts. My wife cuts my hair and then asks me to cut her hair, and I say, "Well, dear, I've had a couple of beers and a jazz gummy. Are you sure?" And she says, "No, I'll do it myself."
That's a hell of a combination, and I'm sure it keeps your hands very steady. Ben, I honestly think I'm going to take off my headphones to show you here. I think it's been almost 3 months since my last haircut. I'm going to show you the profile view, all right?
Yeah. Oh, boy. You've got, like, season one data going there.
I really do, and that's the problem, because I'm pretty happy with the party in the front.
Yeah, the party in the front looks solid.
The party in the back is just way too loud, Ben. It's like your neighbors in New York. They've got the drum set in their loft.
You can't even get their attention with your broom handle against the ceiling.
Here's the problem. For at-home haircuttery, you are committed to the idea of cutting all around. I could not just peanut the back.
No, that would be bad.
It's impossible. It can't be done. So I'm stuck with either growing the front and the back at different rates.
Right.
Where the consequence of this becomes what? Some sort of like Joe Dirt situation?
Yeah.
Or I actually commit to a haircut where I lose the party in the front and the party in the back and become Joe number three guard.
Mm-hmm. I obtained the peanut with the intention of becoming Joe number four, and I made this intention clear to my wife, and we got in a great big fight about it. She did not want me to go to a uniform short length all over, and she was so adamant about it that she insisted on giving me a haircut herself. And so we had the experience of me sitting there biting my tongue while she gave me a haircut.
I think a quality about a professional hairstylist that often goes uncommented on is the degree to which they are expressionless as they cut your hair, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're having a conversation, you're talking like people, but a professional will not look like they're working particularly hard to do a good job in a way that your wife would look like they are really trying in a way that has got to be very stressful.
I think that she doesn't have good bedside manner as a barber, but I will say she did a surprisingly great job on the actual cut. Like, it's not professional by any means, but it's not embarrassing either.
I was about to say, I'm looking at you right now, and you do not look like a person who has endured a at-home haircut by an amateur.
Yeah, it's just that it took like five times as long as a professional haircut, and also like the kind of haircut I get is so different from the kind of haircut that she gets that she doesn't even have like the benefit of having seen it done by another person. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I had to do all of that. Like, you, like, hold the hair between your fingers and you, like, look for the bit that you just cut and cut everything else to that length. Like, that was, like, new thought technology to her.
Yeah, that's scary stuff, man. I mean, I remember the family friend haircut of my youth. I remember the $8 strip mall haircut place by the grocery store that I grew up on. I mean, the consequences of those cuts stay with you for a long time.
I used to go to a chain barber shop in a strip mall near our house called Great Clips for Hair that was sailboat themed.
That was a franchise up where I grew up too.
Yeah. Every between every chair there was like a jib sail to divide the different stations. I had this one barber, he cut my hair for like years and years and years. This guy's name was Joe. And he was like the big shaved bald barber, you know?
Yeah, I mean, do you trust a bald barber?
I trusted Joe.
That's the mock question.
Yeah, he gave me great haircuts. You know, come to think of it, Joe had a look not unlike that of Captain Benjamin Sisko. He was an African American man with a goatee and no hair.
Well, there's a treat in store for us, Ben, I believe, as we get into the episode of the day. Of course, that being Deep Space Nine, Season 6, Episode 19, In the Pale Moonlight.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
The rare Batman reference in a Star Trek title, right?
Yeah. Who is the devil that we're dancing with?
Q.
I guess it's the Romulans. Always a game of chess with them.
If we can hit that bullseye, the rest of the dominoes will fall like a house of cards. Checkmate.
I expected Cisco's dad to be murdered in this episode, weren't you? Shot outside of his restaurant?
I just could not believe that there wasn't a slow motion shot of pearls bouncing on the ground in an alleyway.
This is an episode that has discovered the Interiotron, the episode inspired by all Errol Morris films everywhere.
Yeah, it is Ben Sisko's Fog of War. And
it is.
We talked about that episode where Rene Aubergenois wanted to have, beaten Odo look like the vanquished samurai with the, hair hanging down in front of his face. And Sisko starts this episode, with his action jacket open, his shirt unzipped somewhat, and he just looks devastated in that way.
Yeah, he kind of plays strip storytelling as the episode goes on, taking off an article of clothing with every return to his in-room narration, in-room captain's logging.
He looks quite rumpled, and
you wonder where it's going to end, Ben.
Yeah. Dong out. It's going to be a boudoir photo at the end of this episode. He wants to think back over the last 2 weeks and see if he can puzzle through where he went wrong.
What do you think his drink of choice is? He's got that big Blade Runner glass out.
Yeah.
He's got a bottle of a clear liquid. I don't think we've gotten a sense, like, all of our Star Trek captains seem to have a main drink.
Right.
A drink that you know them by, and I'm not sure if we have that trivia about Sisko, do we?
I feel like there's a lot of Ractagino that gets talked about, but that doesn't feel like he lives on that plot, like everybody lives on that plot on this show.
This is an evening for booze.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. I'd like to think that he's got a nice smoky mezcal.
That is a great big glass. A friend of mine for my birthday got me these Blade Runner glasses.
Cool.
And they are super cool, but they are heavy AF.
Wow.
Like, they're so substantial that it feels like, you know how sometimes you like a nice piece of glass where you feel like it'll be fragile enough to break? This seems heavy enough to break.
Yeah.
In just as easy of a way.
Like if you drop it, it's terminal velocity, will reach its terminal velocity in the like 2.5 feet it has to get to the
it's the a floor. No doubter that thing. Like it would make me fearful of washing it in the sink.
That's
the most dangerous time for glassware in that sink basin.
Gotta be careful. So he launches into this log. He starts talking about how every Friday he posts the death within the Federation on a big view screen in the wardroom. And so
it's Casualty Friday.
Oh boy. Oh yeah, you deserve the title. I think that these characters no longer saying TGIF, they're probably saying something more like GDIF.
What do you make of Sisko's posting these in the wardroom? Like, can you just go in and out of the wardroom if you're an officer whenever you want? I suppose you wouldn't want to put this on the opposite side of the mall directory on the promenade, right? That's no fun.
Yeah. They post it right outside Quark's, so everybody's got a real bummer on when they go in there.
Yeah.
It's weird. Like, it's weird to think about, like, oh yeah, I got to go up and check the list of casualties. Shit, there's a meeting scheduled right now. Can't get in until 4:30.
Yeah, you ever accidentally walk in on that McLaughlin group?
Issue one.
As it's going, because they've gone over on the meeting room.
Yeah,
very awkward.
That awkward backing out of the room. Sorry.
I hated that aspect of corporate life, especially like when you're in the meeting. It's not your meeting to run, and you're in there, and you've noticed that it's gone over, and then you start seeing the people gathered outside wondering what the fuck, and you're, like, shooting mind daggers at the manager who's going over, not realizing this.
Oh, God. Get me as far away from that as I can get.
Guess what is the maximum amount of distance ever measured by anyone in the history of time? It's working that job, being in that conference room, and now recording a Star Trek podcast. We did it, Ben.
This idea is kind of Inception, right? Because it's Bashir that floats it, I think. They're talking about like how a friend of theirs bought the farm, and they're like, yeah, some Jem'Hadar came across the the Romulan part of the border and took out the Cairo. And Bashir's like, well, if the Romulans came into the war, like, this would be great. And Dax is there to remind Bashir that for the Romulans, this is awesome because they can just sit back in the cut and watch the Jem'Hadar and the Cardassians and the Federation and the Klingons tear each other to shreds. And then when the dust settles, the Romulans will be in a great position.
You know, the Romulans' urine is blue-colored. Most people don't know that.
Interesting, given the color of most of their beverages.
You could see how it is aligned with the human custom of drinking champagne or beer. Whiskey, if you are particularly dehydrated. Yeah, it's interesting to hear this coming from him. Like, and he's not wrong at all. Yeah. The Roms are in a prime position to just lay back in the cut and watch the Federation get creamed from a safe distance without getting their hands dirty.
I wanted a little bit to hear him address the idea of how this factors into the unenviable X-Men calculus that the war is unwinnable.
Yeah.
Like,
it suddenly become winnable with their involvement?
Yeah. Like we have this one variable that we could never figure out how to flip the bit on, but if the Romulans become Team Alpha Quadrant, it changes all of the math. Would be a great reassuring thing to hear in a scene like this. Like, it would, yeah. And it would help you understand like why Sisko would go to such lengths, right?
Yeah, it's true. It feels a little unusual that this appears as though this is the first time that Sisko has considered this idea. Like, yeah. it hits him like epiphany.
It sure does. It's epiphanyized to commercial.
Mm-hmm. Sisko has been inspired to make this happen.
That was the moment I made the decision.
And he does a little bit of play acting with Dax in a way to just sort of run a simulation about how a conversation would go between him and a random Romulan in order to like sell the idea of joining the war.
I really like this scene. I like that Dax kind of slips into Romulan affect without signpost it before she does it, and it's very clear what she's doing. Like, that I feel like, yeah, it's well written and well acted.
Very good, old man. You would have made a decent Romulan.
Yeah.
And she's channeling that Romulan vibe in a way that I didn't see coming.
Her impression works, but the conversation doesn't. By the end of it, Sisko's like, yeah, you're right. This is going to be pretty challenging. Not sure if I've got what it takes to make a convincing argument. The question remains, how do you convince them?
The only solution they can come up with is you have to prove to the Romulans that it's in their best interest to be in this war, with like tangible evidence that the Dominion plans to fuck them over. The issue is, like, you know, if the Dominion wins and it's not a like a Pyrrhic victory where they technically win and destroy the Federation and the Klingon Empire, but are also so fucked up themselves that they can't project power into the rest of the quadrant, that's great for the Romulans. But the scenario where the Dominion and the Jem'Hadar just run roughshod over everyone else totally fucks the Romulans because it paints them into a corner. And they kind of need to persuade the Romulans that it's that second situation that is more likely.
Yeah, and it can't just be a presentation. Appealing to their sense of logic and strategy doesn't appear to be on the table at all. There has to be a sort of proof of existential threat.
In a funny way, it kind of like makes it a harder sell overall, because it's like, yeah, like, this isn't that even of a fight. Like, we are definitely gonna get our asses kicked unless you help us. It's not like the most appealing invitation.
One of the qualities I really like about this episode is, like so many plans, the first idea is the most complex and difficult. And then as the story goes on, like, Sisko, as the decision maker, has to like walk it back a little bit into something more attainable, and then walk it back even more into something more attainable than that. And that feels like real life.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit above his pay grade that he's like, he, a captain in Starfleet, has decided to personally draw the entire Romulan Star Empire into the war.
I felt the same way. The moment he talks to Garak and is like, I'm going to run this up the flagpole to Starfleet Command, I checked the time code and it was like halfway through the episode. Like, that train has left the station. Yeah. He's asking for forgiveness at this point instead of permission.
Yeah, we recently watched The Balance of Terror on Greatest Discovery, and like the fact that Kirk is constantly radioing home for approval just to cross the neutral zone is like such a, like, that idea is so far from where Sisko lives.
Right. So not only is the idea that an attack on Romulus by the Dominion is the only thing that would convince the Romulans to join the war, they hypothesize that it exists,
right,
and they also believe that it exists on Cardassia Prime, and that their job is to go to Cardassia Prime and get it. So a number of assumptions combined here, and
they're setting up the road trip episode that we don't get.
Nice to see Garak back on the scene here. Hello, Garak. I forgot you were there.
Yeah, when Sisko says there is somebody living on the station that specializes in getting in places that he isn't invited, I was like, who? I can't think of anyone.
Right. And when you hear Garak say back the plan to Sisko, it sounds insane.
Yeah.
It sounds almost as insane as hearing Sisko say it.
It's more like a suicide mission.
Yeah, and sometimes that's all it takes, right? Somebody to recapitulate the thing you just said to them, to expose what a bozo you are.
It's like that stupid Masterclass ad. Have you seen that? The one where like one of the experts on Masterclass is like a master interrogator. Like, use the technologies of a master interrogator in the workplace. And one of the examples he gives is like repetition. He's like, use conversational repetition to get the upper hand in all business matters. And they cut to a scene of him doing it. And it's basically him just repeating the last four words that were said to him in a conversation. That's what happens here. That's what Garak does to Sisko. He gets the upper hand by just repeating the last four words.
Garak has been using this time for a lot of e-learning opportunities.
Right. Garak sort of pivots Sisko into another way of thinking. Like, if only you were interested in spilling a little bit of blood, I have a related plan that could sort of work to all of our benefit, if you'll only hear me out.
Yeah, because Garak has like a few favors left that he could call in on Cardassia Prime, but he's quite hesitant to do that when he doesn't think that it's actually going to work.
Right.
What he would like instead is to trick the Romulans.
That's right, because it would take a lot of effort to go to Cardassia and get information that may or may not exist. Why would you go through all that effort if instead you could create this evidence out of thin air? Then you would save the gas on the road trip. You get to keep things close to home. You get to get a Romulan senator coming to your house instead of going to theirs. It's just much more convenient for everyone involved.
The road to hell is paved with conveniences.
That's what they say. So the involvement of Senator Vrenak is going to be vital here, because he's known on the street as the guy who is the most hardline. Like, this is his plan. His plan is to lay back and watch the world burn. And so what Garak is saying is that if you can convince this guy that Romulus is in trouble, all the other bread boxes lined up behind him are going to fall like dominoes.
Speaking of dominoes, a pretty major Federation domino falls in this moment. They get word that Beta Zed has been taken over by the Dominion.
How could they not have sensed that coming, is my question.
I wondered what is happening with with Loxana in this moment.
Do we know whether or not a Beta Zed can get a hit off of a Founder or a Vorta? Because Loxana spent a lot of time with Odo.
Yeah.
But I don't think she spent much time with a Vorta or a Jem'Hadar ever.
Yeah, I don't think she could read Odo. But yeah. It wouldn't surprise me if the Founders like coded that in genetically. Like if the Ferengi are unreadable.
Especially with the alpha bred ones, right?
Oh, yeah. You got to harden those guys. yeah. Interesting that Beta Zed gets brought up here without any of like the, you know, we know Betazoid characters and they're left in abstraction in this moment.
Yeah, it's too bad. Cut to Beta Zed, I say.
Yeah.
Let's see those picnics in the park that they're known for.
Yeah, those cum-filled leaves that they love eating.
So the plan is to show the senator a holographic conversation depicting the plan for this Romulan invasion being hatched.
Yeah. But
the thing is, these holograms have to be perfect. There's a technology involved, right? There's a rod.
These rods are manufactured only as needed on Cardassia Prime. Information can only be transcribed on them once and then cannot be altered.
They're going to do like the best forgery that has ever been done in the history of forgeries.
Right.
And to do that, Garak is going to need Sisko to call in a favor to Gowron, because the only forger that he thinks is capable of doing this is currently on death row in Klingon jail.
I feel like the name Graython Tolar is like the name an 8-year-old gives his D&D character. It sounds like so perfectly Star Trekian name, right?
I was kind of hoping that this was going to be a Klingon, and he was going to be like, I am incredibly talented in working in fine details.
I got my first look at this guy, and I was like, is this one of those knee genitals guys?
That was not his knee.
Oh.
That's what I thought he looked like, because he was blue like him.
He's blue like him, but he's also got kind of like extra loafy head, the way those green guys in Who Mourns for Morn,
right?
Have,
yeah, they look like cousins.
And then he's got those.
Well, we don't know where those guys' genitals are.
No, I guess we don't. He's got those spots all over his head, and I wondered if those were scars from choosing his pain.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, you could see it. This guy, though. He does not have the sort of attitude that would suggest a hardened criminal type.
I've never worked for Starfleet before.
He's interesting because he's a chill and pretty like pleasant character to be around.
Definitely a white collar criminal.
Right. I mean, he's like a dirtbag, right? Like he assumes that they busted him out of jail so he could make an incredibly detailed porno for Captain Sisko.
Right.
Which is like a little worrisome about his level, like his intelligence quotient. But
he was so excited about this plan that it's almost as if he had started it already.
Yeah, he like in mid-flight, he was already like designing the Orion slave girls for the program.
I feel like if you were the designer of a holosuite program, much in the same way you and I worked as editors professionally, like you have a sequence that's already templatized for such a thing.
Yeah.
You already have 4 Orion slave girls dialed up, ready to go.
Right. Yeah, you just you launch the project and you've got assets that have already been pulled into it.
Right, right.
I mean, you just start dropping transitions and stings onto everything. This guy is not on board the station for long before the hardenedness of his criminality becomes evident, though.
Yeah, because he goes and gets into a bar fight almost immediately with Quark, and he stabs him.
Yeah, with the bartender. That's fucked up.
Never fight a bartender.
He was drinking Wayland bitters, Adam. I wondered if Wayland bitters are a thing you can get. Can you get Yutani liqueur?
There's nothing wrong with it.
Maybe.
That would be good.
This looks like a flesh wound in Quark's chest.
Yeah.
This looks like a nearly fatal stab wound that he's absorbed.
I think they talk about a knife, but it kind of looks more like
the like break a bottle on the edge of the bar and stab somebody with it.
This is classic bad bar behavior. We get a nice bit of storytelling by Odo, because Odo tells Sisko what happened, and what happened is Tolar got hammered. He tried to grab the ass of a Dabo girl. Quark defended her and then got stabbed in the process.
Like maybe like the first unambiguous like good thing that Quark has done on the show.
Yeah, but this is a problem for Sisko, because Tolar isn't supposed to even be there, man.
Normally he'd be sitting in a holding cell, but he claims he's a friend of yours.
He's no friend of mine.
And if Quark decides to press charges, it means that administratively he will have been there, and that can't happen. So Sisko has to sit down next to Quark and work out some sort of arrangement where Quark would not press charges, and this takes a bribe.
I was thinking about how often it comes up that Quark is the one getting bribed, and it's not that often, but I do remember a scene in maybe like season one or two where Quark was in Sisko's office and Sisko said, like, you're going to do this for me or I'm going to start charging you rent on the bar. And I feel like that should just always be the leverage.
Right. Yeah.
But instead, Quark gets like a big payout. He gets his shirt replaced. He's coming up off this. Like this getting stabbed business was great for him.
Unfortunately, this really diverts Sisko's attention, because now he's working with Garrick on the repair of Quark's shirt and this mission.
Right.
It's just a lot for Garrick to concentrate on.
The guy only has so much bandwidth, you know?
Back with Sisko, we get another, and these are dotted throughout the episode, we go back into the current time and get more of him speaking to camera. And I would say you either love or hate these scenes. If you did not appreciate the acting of Avery Brooks in Far Beyond the Stars, you're probably not going to be into this, because only Avery Brooks can do this, I think.
Yeah.
I can think of no other Star Trek captain who could do an episode like this with scenes like this directly to the camera and make them of the quality that they are. I mean, he's monologuing here, but he's 10 out of 10 every time.
Yeah, I think like the first time I watched this episode, my brain couldn't even compute that he was looking at me.
Yeah, you kind of looked away.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah, and I think that that's an amazing, it's amazing that it's taken them this long to discover this power he has, almost.
You know what's wild about that is it's kind of a simulation for acting across from him. Like, think about how difficult it's got to be to lock into his attention when you're sharing a scene with him as an actor.
Yeah.
If you're just feeling this watching the episode and the scenes where he's acting to camera here.
Yeah, it's fucking wild.
Doesn't look easy if you can't even watch the episode, Ben.
Yeah. Alamarin, come to Fort. Alamarin, come to Fort. What are you doing? Alamarin, come to Fort. What are you doing? Mind what you're doing now.
One of my favorite scenes is next, because Garrick gets on the lift wearing a flamboyant TNG season one security uniform.
it's kind of the Tuvix uniform in a way.
It is hilarious looking.
Yeah, it's good.
Usually Garrick wears more layers than this, and you really get a sense for how jacked he is.
Mm-hmm.
As a character.
Yeah, he moves around a lot more in this episode than he often does, and the shape of his body is not what I expected.
And the less I'm seen parading through ops, the better.
You get a sense for how much power Garrick has over this circumstance, because he tells Sisko that he's locked Tolar in his quarters with the suggestion that his door may be wired to explode if he attempts to leave. And also, like, in order to get this rod situation dealt with, they're going to need some biomimetic gel in exchange. And we know from experience what kind of value is placed on this gel. It's not something that is obtained easily.
There's one person that they can obtain this very special kind of honey stick from, and what they want is 200 liters of biomimetic gel in payment, which is not really possible, because the Federation does not release biomimetic gel to anyone. It's the best lubricant in the galaxy,
and letting anyone fuck that smooth is not in the Federation's best interest.
In the conversation that he has next with Bashir, Bashir's like, well, you've come to the right source for all matters liquid.
200 is a lot of liters, but if this person is a real freak like me, that might be what they need.
This is a great scene for Bashir.
I'd like this order in writing, please, sir.
Because he takes great umbrage with the idea of letting this controlled substance just go out to whoever.
Yeah.
And Sisko is not trying to hear his objections. Sisko goes all the way up to ordering him, and Bashir does the administrative protest moves that right. are available to him, but they are pretty flaccid.
He basically doesn't want to get left holding the bag if this blows up, so he wants the orders in writing, which Sisko has anticipated. And then he's like, well, shit. Well, I'm also putting it in my log then. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he's paper trailing it. It's like when you notice somebody is including a lot of details about when you last spoke in the emails and you're like, oh, man.
Right.
This is weak.
Yeah. Bashir's like, I can't give you all 200 liters, but I can give you 85 liters, and if you have to, you can just spit on it.
Dismissed.
The next scene is them reviewing the forgery, which is a holographic record of this conversation that never took place between Damar, some legate, and Wayoon about quote-unquote stage two of the Dominion's plan in the Alpha Quadrant. And stage two is the turning on the Romulans and surprising them by invading them. There was like apparently an earlier version of this that didn't work for Sisko, so he's given some studio notes, and now he's reviewing Data Rod version 17 final last one .mov and you think it's probably good enough.
I love the suggestion of the versioning, but I wish we saw one of the older crappier run-throughs of this, where
like Damar just and Damar are being cordial with each other,
where their voices don't match up, where there's like some like we're running into this a lot as we record the show remotely, like where you go out of sync a little bit.
Oh yeah, yeah, some little flash frames or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be just fun.
Just a little editing mistakes. I mean, like, that's got to be a joke that's available to them, right? Like, they have to send these episodes to the studio for approval, I imagine. So it would have been fun to see them just, like, play with that a little bit more.
Talar is at the controls in this scene.
So, you are happy.
And they both give him the approval thumbs up. Go ahead and lock it in. Stick it in the rod.
The idea with this rod is that it's like you can write to this one time. You can't copy what's been written to it. It's like a perfect one-time-only archival record of something. So theoretically impossible to fake, and they're getting as close to perfectly faking one as you possibly can.
I love the moment where Talar is done, and he pulls out the honey stick and hands it to Garak, and Garrick's like, I'm not touching that thing. Stick it in the box.
Yeah.
Like, if you're ever given a job where the person you're doing the job for does not want to touch the thing that you worked on, that's a pretty bad sign of the criminality that you've conspired in, right?
Yeah. I kind of thought that Graython Tolar should have like pulled out a hanky from his pocket and like rubbed the fingerprints off this thing.
This is how Graython Tolar went to prison the first time, by touching the rod.
This guy's a fucking idiot. Take basic precautions, Graython.
He's kind of dumb.
This is a scene that ends with Sisko like slamming Graython up against the wall, because Graython's like, cool, thanks guys, off I go. And Sisko's like, no, you're sticking around, bub. Like, we're gonna make sure that this passes muster with our client before we let you go. And if it doesn't, you're right back to like the clutches of the Klingon Empire.
Kind of a lot is made at the end of the episode about how much regret Sisko feels about his actions. But it starts here, right? You never see him get physical with a guy out of the blue like this. I think it speaks to the desperation that really starts now.
Right, because like he has been really playing outside the margins to get this done and going out on limb after limb, best intentions being save a lot of lives and, you know, end the war with a V for the good guys. But He's also like really gone outside the margins for it, and is starting to act more like a gangster than a Starfleet captain, to be honest. Yeah.
Like Avery Brooks is so intense verbally that to get that combination of his intensity, both in a line delivery, but also in a throw a guy up against a wall kind of way, it's pretty scary stuff.
Yeah. And the addressing the camera scenes, like, I feel like they started at like an 8, but now we're like past a 10. I feel like, I feel like when we cut away from this scene, he's like at an 11. It's really when I started to get uncomfortable.
There's a really neat scene next where Senator Vreenak's shuttle arrives, and we see a part of the station that we haven't seen before, because they go up to the docking bay and they await the arrival of this thing, and we see the entire process. We see the door open, something invisible come in, the door shuts behind, and then like the airlock pushes out at the now uncloaked Romulan shuttle. It's a really neat sequence.
It's super cool. It's Deep Space Nine's equivalent of the shuttle bay, and we see like a runabout parked in the back there, but this is like the other side of the wall for what, you know, when we see a runabout coming up on a landing pad, what goes on, you know, under that hole. And it's amazing that it's like late season 6 that we ever get to see the mechanics of that. And it's super neat. It's I was also quite excited to see it.
Vreenak joins Sisko for a glass of the blue drink of illicit conversations between enemies. It's a conversation that started out in the hallway where Vreenak really big dogs Sisko quite a bit.
My opinion of Starfleet officers is so low. You'd have to work very hard indeed to disappoint me.
Yeah. He's like taking his time to come hear Sisko out, which is kind of amazing by itself. But he's also like doesn't want to let Sisko get the wrong idea that Vreenak is like considering him to be an equal.
This is one of those like summit meeting type scenes where like two leaders of their people come together to chop it up, and they talk about the possible outcomes of the war. Concurrently, Garak has asked permission to board his shuttle, which you just sort of understand is happening at the same time while Vreenak is distracted by this blue drink.
Garak makes the case that he's going to go see if there's any interesting intelligence in the computer on Vreenak's shuttle surreptitiously, because Vreenak won't be traveling with that many guards. This scene's also really interesting because Vreenak is... They're talking about like, we're in this cold war against each other, and, you know, the Dominion winning the war could really be great for Romulus. But the other part of the conversation is about this blue drink, this Cali Fall that they're drinking, and Vreenak detecting the flaws in the replication of it, like talking about it being an imperfect facsimile of the real thing.
Real Cali Fall should forcibly open one's sinuses well before the first sip.
Really foreshadowing his ability to detect a fake!
Because we smash cut right into the holo meeting and Vreenak watching it. I should say experiencing it, because that's the way holo meetings work. He's like walking around, mingling with the characters inside.
Yeah, looking up close at Wei Yun. And, you know, this is a pretty crazy piece of news for him to be processing, that they're about to get fucked over by these people that they thought they had a peace treaty with. So he's like, you'll forgive me if I want to subject that honey stick to a little bit of scrutiny.
And this is maybe the moment of greatest stress for Sisko, this intervening time between the moment he gives the honey stick to Vreenak and when he gets an answer as to whether or not Vreenak believes it to be true.
I can't remember. What did Vreenak say about the honey stick?
It's a fake.
Pretty silly moment for Vreenak here.
Yeah. I thought that it was maybe the greatest masterstroke that the show has ever done, to have Keenan play Sisko just for this one moment.
It's a fake.
Uncomfortable silence.
This, I think the pacing of this episode makes possible this transition, because we go straight from this crescendo. Like, we've reached this moment of great stress. Sisko's been found out. the honey sticks a fake. And we cut elliptically to like back at work a few days later. We never get the consequence of it's a fake in the moment. We never get the conversation that happens after this. We don't get Vreenak stomping off towards a shuttle.
Right.
It's just, that's the end of that scene. And then we cut to the consequence later. I thought that was a really interesting choice that I don't think works in an episode that's paced differently.
Right.
You really are made not to think about that.
It was a gambit that failed, except for that it didn't. Because the potential for blowback here, like the reason that you would imagine Starfleet would forbid a captain to engage in an enterprise like this is that, like, the Romulans now have every reason to side with the Dominion against the Federation for being duplicitous creeps that tried to trick them into a giant war that will result in millions of Romulan deaths. And yet, like, the moments after Sisko processing that are, like, pretty optimistic. Like, we're back at GDIF, and, you know, like, they're like, people are saying, like, yeah, like, there's like one casualty of somebody we know, but it like seems like the death list is not as big a bummer this week as it is a lot of weeks.
No, it sounds a bit strange, but I'd say we're off to a pretty good start today.
And then and then Worf comes in with some pretty crazy news.
He's giddy, which made me suspicious right away. He says that Vreenak's shuttle was destroyed.
Senator Vreenak, he was returning to Romulus from a diplomatic mission to Sakaar when his shuttle exploded. They believe that the Dominion is responsible.
The Dominion assassinated a Romulan senator.
On a diplomatic mission.
That changes everything. It could even bring the Romulans into the war.
He's like, guys, you know how when we're coming back from a conference, it's always super fucked up? Did you know that that can happen to Romulans also?
Hey, Sisko, you know that sound you've been working on? Well, listen to this.
Sisko does the math on why that would be and is in Garrick's shop punching him over a table in short shrift.
The back of the hand punch.
Yeah.
Criminally underutilized in Star Trek, I think.
Yeah.
But also got to be like one of the most painful punches for the puncher.
It's like a belly flop where it's like, it is a funny joke at the expense of really hurting yourself.
It's also a very weak punch because you put no body behind a punch that you backhand, like,
yeah.
you get none of the force involved with punching forward.
Well, you have to count on your victim to really sell it, which Garrick does. He goes flying over this table.
You see that table in the foreground, and it's like seeing a wheelchair basketball team in a Michael Bay movie. Like, you know someone's going over that table, Ben.
Yeah. And Garrick's like, explanation is like, yeah, like I put a bomb that made it look like the Jem'Hadar did this in his shuttle because we needed to guarantee that this worked. And now, like, the Romulans will find his dead body and they will find the damaged but still readable honey stick, and the damage will cover up the fact that the honey stick is a forgery. And now you've got exactly what you set out to do.
A war between the Romulans and the Dominion?
Look at me. I am Section 31 now.
I love how the reasons for Sisko being angry are so multifaceted, right? Because, like, let's talk about all the ways that he's angry here. He's angry that Vreenak's shuttle was destroyed without his express written approval. Like, this mission was done behind his back.
Yeah.
But also that he was party to murder.
Right.
But also that I truly believe that he's the most upset at his lack of control of the situation.
Yeah, he's mad at himself more than Garrick. Yeah. It's just that Garrick, he has like the ability to punish a little bit.
Right. Garrick makes a pretty strong case about the outcome maybe forgiving the method. And he sort of questions Sisko's ability to accept that.
And if your conscience is bothering you, you should soothe it with the knowledge that you may have just saved the entire Alpha Quadrant.
And when we get that final moment in Sisko's quarters of the personal log, we see how tortured Sisko is.
Yeah.
Before finally being not tortured at all about it. He reconciles himself with the truth of the matter and his instrumentality in it.
Like, it's a very dark idea. And the idea, I think, specifically is, in this case, the ends are going to justify the means. And that's an idea that I don't think you could do with a Captain Picard, for example.
It suggests to me a question about whether or not Ben Sisko has broke bad, because when characters on TV shows do this, when they get a taste for what's possible when you act outside of the rules of your job or your society or anything else, you don't just stop after doing it once.
Yeah.
There's an addiction to an ability to get something done, sometimes easier this way. And so that was the feeling that I had at the end. It's like, is this a new Sisko going forward? The Sisko that isn't afraid to break a couple of talars to make a Sisk omelet.
You really want to do this here, now, okay, let's do it,
It's an idea that kind of flies in the face of some of the things I really like about Star Trek, which is like, I don't think the ends do justify the means. I think there are no ends, you know, like there are only means in reality, and you have to live up to your own morals. And I think that this is a great episode from an acting standpoint and a very interesting episode from a storytelling standpoint. But to me, it's a little bit of a disappointment in terms of a, like, presenting the ideals of a better future.
I liked the episode because it's the needs of the many question, like we've seen so many times, but it's presented in a way where, like, this is Sisko's Spock box. Like, this is his warp core, you know? Like, he's going in and doing something awful in order to ensure the Federation's survival. Yeah. And it doesn't matter if all he has are those gloves. Like, he's willing to absorb the radiation of this mission he did.
Yeah.
So that the Federation can survive. And I really like how there is a parallel between those two things. I think you're right, though. I think there's no question that this is like the darkest possible permutation of that idea, and it is an idea that has been presented in Star Trek episodes and movies since the beginning. Right. And you're only supposed to think of it in the most Roddenberryan kind of way, the nice way. The case I'm trying to make here is that it's not a manipulation of that theme at all. I think it is exactly what it says on the box. I think this is just one of the versions, one of the many versions that you get inside that theme.
I think it despoils the character a little bit, though. And like, if this is the moment that he breaks bad and learns the wrong lesson, that breaking the rules is sometimes an easier way of getting to what you want, then that sucks, you know?
Hey, man, I was already here with him after he fucked Mirror Dax and Mirror Sisko's wife on the same day. If you didn't think this was predicted a couple of seasons ago, that's where he broke bad. He broke it off bad,
wow.
Ben.
Well, do you want to get into a pledge break, Adam?
Yeah, we got to do that.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
But the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, we have a couple of personal priority one messages here. The first one is from Officer Steve McKenzie, and it's to J.L. Wallace. Message goes like this. Sup, buddy? The purchase of this P1 has forced me to pawn off my vintage one-of-a-kind Jim Shimoda collectible card just to cover the costs.
Wow.
But it's a small price to pay for the countless hours of ridiculous entertainment, so I will learn to live with it because I can live with it. I can live with it. Here's to 25 more years of friendship.
Wow.
I think the more times you say you can live with something, the more clear it is that you might not be able to live with that thing.
Yeah, you're saying
that you can live with.
You're telling yourself as though you need to tell yourself a lot in order to believe it.
Right.
I have a question here, which is that Officer Steve McKenzie spelled it with a G, G-Y-M Shimoda.
Right, right.
Is there such a thing as a Jim Shimoda collectible card?
I'm wondering if this is a thing, this is a product made on the Jim Shimoda Facebook group, because I'm unaware of a GYM Shimoda collectible card.
Yeah.
And if there were one, I would be inflating that Shimoda bubble as we speak. You know, I want to do that.
you love to create a bubble wherever possible, especially in a pool.
Right. Yeah. I love making bubbles in a jacuzzi. Then nobody knows it's you.
Adam, we have a second priority one message here. It is from Aaron, your wife, and it's to Peter, who gets excited when Ben and Charles Allen like his tweet. It goes like this. Happy 7th anniversary. Shit hasn't hit the fan. No Riker hair or disheveled Janeway bun to signal trouble. I love our Riker levels of enthusiastic consent, and I'll keep things tighter than a real doll down there.
What?
The Tans and I love you so much. Adam and Ben, the best tiki bar in DC is in our kitchen, and you are welcome anytime.
I'm a little confused about where the euphemisms begin and where they end in this message. What tiki bar is Aaron referring to?
I think Aaron wants us to come over for drinks.
Okay.
But I feel like it's pretty intense on the heels of her describing how she's intending to keep things tight in a very specific way.
Wow. A lot of enthusiasm in a lot of places in this message.
Yeah.
From Aaron, your wife.
No 7-year itch for Aaron, your wife, and Peter, who gets excited.
Jeez, I think Peter is going to need some of that nugget ice that tiki bars have.
Wow. Well, a couple of great P1s. If you'd like to get one, head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, and you know what to do. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
This is the easiest Shimoda I think either of us have ever picked, right?
It's a fake.
I mean, this line read is incredible. I would watch an oral history documentary about this choice.
Uh-huh.
In saying it this way.
It's a fake.
Like, I would want to see the script and the script notes and whatever parentheticals were there.
It's a fake.
I want to sit down with this actor and really dig in to why he did it like this.
It's a fake.
Everything about it's a fake is amazing. And I'm not sure if it's for the reasons that they would hope, you know? Like, I wonder if you're shooting this scene, if you see the humor in it the way we do.
It's such a big choice. I think they have to have seen the humor in it. So is your Shimoda Vreenak?
It is. Vreenak and the actor who plays Senator Vreenak and making the decision. It's like at the end of Best of Both Worlds, we rack into Riker and he's like, fire!
I mean, because my Shimoda is Sisko for the cut to react in this scene. The camera pushing in on Sisko, just bricking one, is unbelievable. Like, it's like it is matching big for big in a certain way.
As soon as you add another vowel to the word in the script, you have got to be really sure that you have the performance right. Because I think of the way we've seen climax in Star Trek forever. Mm-hmm. Like when you start chaining together vowels in in
like,
words.
Like in the word con, for example.
That's what I'm saying. Like you increase the camp value of that line read like by an order of magnitude.
With every vowel.
I don't think you see it a lot, and I think there is a reason for that. And this scene is proof of it.
Yeah. I think that you can be a little bit more colorful in your line read when Avery Brooks is going to be the reaction shot, though. And his
very true.
When you see the implications of how fucked he is wash over him, it retroactively justifies a weird choice.
Yeah, you're exactly right. When you do the math of it, it's what he's saying that carries the day and not the way he says it.
It is a totally amazing moment. It's like one of the most amazing like two-shot scenes in the entire history of Star Trek.
Why did he take the honey stick with him if it was a fake?
I guess to show the rest of Romulus what duplicitous jerks the Federation are.
Everyone's lucky he did.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Gotta get that gold press latch.
I've got to fly cross-country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusea today, and there have already been two flight delays on the outbound. And as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait, and I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS. And with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com, and the promo code is SCARVS.
Every morning when I hop out of bed, I get a couple of capsules of my Ritual multivitamin and a capsule of my Ritual Symbiotic Plus probiotic. I pop them in my mouth, wash them down with a bunch of water, and I know I've taken vitamins and supplements that are going to get my body off to a good start. And these are rigorously tested and validated by third parties for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. And they use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. The Essential for Men is the quality multivitamin that I take from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scars. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Well, Adam, I think it is about time to determine what the next episode will be on this show and how we will be consuming it. So why don't you head to gach.biz/game while I tell you about Season 6, Episode 20, His Way. Odo receives lessons in romancing Kira from a holographic 1960s lounge singer.
Gross. I will veto the next episode, Ben. I'm using my one veto. We're skipping the next one. I don't want to see it.
You may be thinking of the TNG portion of our program. This is the Deep Space Nine portion of the program. And
you're saying I don't have one of those.
You do not have one of those. And Vic Fontaine, the lounge singer in question, becomes a very important character in Deep Space Nine, if you can believe it.
I have no idea who this guy is outside of just, like, I've heard the name.
Yeah.
I've seen pictures of him, but this is, this is DS9 I've never seen before. So, great. Really looking forward to it, Ben. You really sold me on the idea.
That's the beauty of the Deep Space Nine portion of Greatest Gen. I don't need to sell you, baby. This shit sell itself.
Well, one part of our show that couldn't possibly be screwed up is the Game of Buttholes, Will of the Prophets, where currently our runabout is on square 69.
Nice.
A couple of squares ahead is a Quark's Bar episode, and
oh boy,
nothing at all after that. So let's see what we got.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Got the die in my hand. I'm going to give it a roll. And I've rolled a 5.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
Wow.
Which has plopped us on square 74.
Okay.
Inching ever closer to a Mournhammered episode at the end of the game.
Yeah. Still a few hazards ahead. There's that nth degree pretty close now.
Yeah.
We could be stuck doing research, Adam. We hate that.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. Fuck that.
Fuck that shit. Well, regular old episode next week, and we like those as well. Another thing we really like is all of the friends of DeSoto who support the show on a monthly basis. It is the easiest thing to do. You go to MaximumFun.org/join, and it just dings your credit card or debit card or whatever.
Make it a credit card thing. Get some airline miles out of it.
I'm pretty sure, like, Capital One or somebody is offering a, 5x points on Maximum Fun contributions credit card.
Right.
So, look around for that. Sign up for it. And support your favorite Star Trek podcast. And we really need that support. It does not get any easier to run the business that we accidentally started when we started Star Trek podcasting. So the funds that you contribute make that possible, and it make it possible for us to continue doing the show going forward.
When you support the show, you are known as a friend of DeSoto, and two of our best friends of DeSoto come in the form of Bill Tilly. He's on Twitter at BillTilly1973. He of the comedy trading cards that you can find using the hashtag GreatestGen every week. Adam Ragusea, another great friend of DeSoto. He is the creator of our interstitial music that we use on the show, which is a fun little riff on the main title music that we've used for years. That's by the great Dark Materia.
If you enjoy the show, tweet about it, go on Facebook, tell people on Facebook that you like it, and there are Reddit subs and Facebook groups, and there's the Greatest Gen Wikia. There are all kinds of great online ways to have a more rich experience with the show, and we encourage you to do them and not be dicks.
And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which you can't veto. We don't have those anymore.
Yeah. Why did we beat our swords to plowshares, Adam? What were we thinking?
You know what? A listener can veto any episode they want.
Yeah, they probably should.
They have that kind of power.
Yeah.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.